The following message was recorded at the Pastor Summit 2025 at Hometown Church, Bloomington, Minnesota. Front Stage Pastors, Backstage Realities by David Blum.
Lord, I just thank you that you do bring people into our life and you do prompt us to initiate with people to help us on our journey, especially as pastors, as elders, as men who have spiritual leadership and authority and responsibility. God, it's so amazing and it's so profound and it's so rewarding, but it is at times just really hard, really challenging, even confusing. And Lord, we get to places in our journey where we want to give up. We get to places in our journey where we want to become bitter or resentful and rationalize it, and everything in between. But Lord, as we explore today, as we discuss today, I pray that all of us here in this room would take something meaningful from it and some action step to move us forward. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Let me tell you two quick stories about why I was energized to do the seminar. First of all, we're talking about backstage and front stage of our lives and our persona as leaders. We have a front stage and we have a backstage. The front stage is what we'd like everybody to see and present, and it might be not just our individual life, it might be the church as a whole, but our identities are represented often and expressed through that. The backstage is the stuff that you don't want people to see. When it comes to a performance, I was acutely aware of that because in 2016, my daughter got to perform and dance on the Today Show. And she had a book written about her. It got to the Today Show. The Today Show asked her, Hoda Kotb and Kathy Lee Gifford wanted her to come on, interview her, and they invited us. So it was kind of like really surreal because they put us up in a hotel right two blocks away, paid for the whole thing. I actually had to leave the pastor's conference in Omaha, Nebraska that year, a day early to get there. Met my wife and daughter there. They flew in separately. And so the morning of the Today Show, it's a Thursday, it's Father's Day weekend. It was a Thursday. And I remember the producer coming over to the hotel and kind of setting us up. And she said, we're going to walk over there. And so she starts taking us through all the security measures to get to the area where they do the makeup and all that stuff. And I think, I'm getting to see something not too many people get to see. So that was like the first thing. Then they do all the makeup and they bring us up to what's called the green room, which is where all the guests are. And in Hannah's case, what had happened is she got invited in to be in a segment called Everyone Has a Story. And they did it once a month, and they would feature ordinary people who did extraordinary things. And so they brought her ballet teacher, who had been instructing her since age five, Hannah, age five, and who wrote a book about her called Hannah Finds Her Voice. And so they brought them onto the set, Hannah onto the set. And what I did not know until that day was they had also, Kathy Lee Gifford had written an original song for her, the lyrics, called Dance Baby Dance. And they, hey Brian, and they had hired a Broadway composer to score it. And they had hired a Broadway actor, singer, dancer from Finding Neverland to sing and dance to the song. And I found that out that morning. Then as we got into the green room, the producer said, and by the way, Hannah, you can dance to the song if you want to. And she had never heard the song again. And this is when I got really, I was like so excited, I had goosebumps and I wanted to throw up. Because what Dad is thinking is it's live TV, it's millions of years, and she's going to blow it, and it's just going to, like, go south. But in the backstage, in the green room, she developed a little connection with the singer-dancer. Tony, his name is Tony Yazbek. And I thought something cool was happening, so that eased me a little bit. We get out, we get onto the set. The first portion of it is an interview, then they go to a break. Then they bring out the Tony Yazbek and the performers, the guy who wrote the song, and he's playing piano. And he starts singing the song, and halfway through it, Hannah gets a feel for it. And then she looks at him, and he looks at her, and I look at her, and I know she's going up there. So I just prayed a Nehemiah prayer, like, God, make this work. She gets up there, and he defers to her and involves her in the dance. And this guy is like a super tap dancer. And the whole thing kind of works out like magically, if I can use that word, in a pastor's conference. Like, God put the whole thing together. And at the end of it, it worked out so beautifully that actually, literally, Hoda Kotb and Kathy Lee Gifford started crying on the set. And they said, we've never seen something like this. And what it and then as we go forward, we come back after the second break, and they give us a surprise thing. Here you go, Sergio. They give us a surprise thing, and here's the surprise. They give us tickets to see the Cinderella performed by the San Francisco Ballet Company in the Kennedy Center, but with a backstage pass. So at intermission, Vanessa, Hannah, and I, her teacher, her husband, and Hannah, are ushered backstage, and we get to meet all the performers and see the backstage of the Kennedy Center. And I say all that to set it up this way, is the front stage is what's presented. The backstage is what makes it happen. And when you invite the right people at the right time, in the right way, into your backstage, your front stage will be authentic. If you don't have the right people at the right time, in the right way, seeing the backstage of your heart and life, I don't want to say this too strongly, but you're a bit of a fraud. And I don't mean that in its fullest sense, because none of us here are frauds. We love Jesus. We're authentic people. But are you maybe disingenuous would be a better word? You're presenting something that's really not as real as people think it is. The other thing I'll say about it is the backstage is also a very fascinating thing to see, because the backstage of the Kennedy Center, you saw all these apparatus and hydraulics, and the dancers actually were all really cool. They let us take pictures with Hannah. But the thing that went together to produce this ballet was just phenomenal. So there's also this aspect where you and I have stuff going backstage that really is incredible, because God's at work. He's working in us, and he's doing things behind the scenes that when you present the front stage, if you let God into those things and other people into those things, it's really phenomenal, and it makes that front stage really cool. For instance, had Tony Yazbek not made a personal connection with Hannah, because really, think about it this way. What does some Broadway star want to do with a Down syndrome kid from Virginia? I don't know. I thought the guy'd be stuck up. But he wasn't. He was relational. And he treated her with honor and respect, and she caught that. She's very intelligent. She catches those things. And that backstage reality made something really remarkable in the front stage of it. Does any of that make sense to you? You got that? Okay, so that's what I'm going to do today. We're going to dive into six things, six relationships that I think every pastor needs to have in place on some level, and that level will vary throughout seasons of life, so it may not be the same all the time, but you need these things, and you need to cultivate them and develop them. Much like Tony and Hannah developed something backstage, much like those dancers and the apparatus at the Kennedy Center all came together to present a phenomenal performance. And here they are. I'm going to set you up with them. Before I send them up, I'm kind of setting you up and telling you. All right, I'll just give them to you, then we'll look at the framework. So everyone needs six, and here they are. The first three are related more to the front stage, and that's this: a boss, a trainer, and a coach. A boss, a trainer, and a coach. They tend to work more on the front stage stuff, the stuff that people tend to see. Okay? Then the three that you need more for the backstage are a counselor, a mentor, and a friend. Okay? Boss, trainer, coach, counselor, mentor, friend. So if you flip to the backside, I want to give you a little. This actually, I have to give some credit here because I did not originate this. And it came from a very fascinating book called Survive or Thrive by Jimmy Dodd. Anybody heard of Jimmy Dodd or the organization Pastor Serve?
He's Kansas City located.
He is. He's a huge Kansas City Jayhawk fan. He's also a huge Packer fan, Rob. He is, yeah. So, Mark, yeah. So, anyways. I love his heart. And what he's really trying to do is help pastors get the right people into the backstage and then work appropriately on the front stage so there's authenticity. And here's a little bit of his framework, and it's kind of been helpful to me, so I'm going to walk you through it in a short version. And that's this. If you look at the graph on the back, he's got a kind of a concept as he's served pastors over decades and been a pastor himself. He calls it the maturity gap index. Fancy way of saying, oftentimes a pastor's skill and giftedness that's presented on the front stage exceeds their character and their maturity. So if you look at the graph, character and giftedness are both represented on the graph. And on the bottom line is you're talking about his age. So the concept that he promotes is as a pastor ages, you want to shrink the gap between his giftedness and skill and his maturity and character. Now, I want to give a little caveat here. If you look on the far left side, he's got a pretty big gap, right? I think in our movement, in our tribe, that gap is much shorter than many other situations because we emphasize character so much. So I just my personal opinion, but I do think there is a gap. And especially as we enter ministry, the gap tends to be higher more pronounced. And as we grow, as we mature, and as we understand how to pastor, Rob, thank you for your seminar. Sorry, couldn't get to all of it. But as we learn how to pastor, your gifting and skill will continue to increase. You see that line that kind of keeps increasing? But your maturity, which I think is not a straight line, it tends to, unless you're not like me, I tend to have bad days or bad moments, or times when I've not paid attention to my character development as much as I should. God sends people, God sends circumstances, God sends spies like my kids, you know, to spy on me and reveal things, or my wife will say something that I'm not too happy to hear at the moment, but it's probably true most of the time, right? And so you kind of get this sense. So your maturity. And so anyways, basic concept, keep increasing your gifting and skill, the front stage, but pay a lot of attention to the backstage and get the right people to help that increase. And the more you close that gap, the more authentic you are, the more genuine you are in what you're presenting, and the less likely you'll burn out, give up, hang up the towel. So then if you go to the bottom section, you'll see the midline there is just the dividing line between the front stage and the backstage. He calls the front stage the professional side, but he doesn't mean that artificially. It just means we get compensated typically, or we get some kind of reward for the professional front side. But the personal backside is really absolutely essential. And so the boss, trainer, coach approach more of the front side, the counselor, mentor, friend, the backside. So let's flesh this out a little bit. Then I'm going to get you guys doing a little bit of working exercise, okay? So what do we mean a little bit by these six areas? Let's tackle the first three in order. The boss. Okay. Somebody help me out in your situation. Nick.
Yeah.
Who is your boss at Lindworth? Who or what?
The elders.
Okay. So you have an elder board. Okay. And you're accountable to all of them in the same way, or some of them more than others, or just tell me. And it's not right or wrong, I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, so we have a lead pastor model.
Okay.
So I have people that are accountable, that report to me that I'm their boss.
Okay.
And there's a couple, so.
Is he a good boss or not? No, let's not go there. Okay, we'll just. That's kind of backstage stuff that we won't put front stage today. Okay, so.
So, yeah, basically everyone in the organization, they might have a direct manager, but as lead pastor, I would be the boss of our staff.
Okay, but.
In terms of my role, I am accountable to the elders.
Okay, so, okay.
I guess equally. I mean, they're the ones who do my performance review. And
they all speak into the performance review. Okay. Let's pick another. Rob and Mark, who's the boss? They both point at each other, but you have a plurality of elders in that. Okay, now I'm going to press in a little bit. Who can fire you?
Yeah, I really, truly.
Justin and I can fire him.
Yeah. All the elder team would need some agreement before one of you is fired or released. Or can one of you trump all the other elders and say, that's where I want to know where the real power comes from, because if one of them can fire you, they're really ultimately the boss. But if you have to have unanimity, then that's who the boss is. Does that make sense? And so how easy would it be, Nick, for the board at Lindworth to fire you? What would have to happen?
I would imagine there'd have to be a motion and a meeting, and I think our bylaws say the first round has to be unanimous. If not, then it gets tabled, and at the next meeting there's a 2/3 majority.
Okay. Does it go before the congregation or not? You don't know. Because you haven't read the bylaws recently.
No.
I don't. You don't?
It does.
Okay.
We're not congregationally led in that.
Okay. Way. Okay. Yeah, in our setting, we have a board of elders with equal authority. There's six of them now. Okay. But we wrote in our bylaws that for pastoral removal, the elders would have to agree. But then we would present before the congregation as another check.
Would you do an actual vote?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I think it's 2/3. Yeah. So now the reason I bring this up is not to get into governance, but just to say this. When you worked for a different job other than the church, all of us have or are right now, right? Do you have to go through all of that just to get fired?
No.
Okay. you probably had a boss that had much more ability to say a performance review, you're not. Who's your boss in the school?
The director of the school.
Director of the school. And if he does a performance review...
It's not even that. If he decides, you're gone. Right? There's nothing.
Okay. So the reason I bring up the first one... The reason I bring up the first one is we don't have the kind of boss situation typically that you do outside of the church. So here's something you and I need to work at is making sure that we've got specific accountability with someone that can hold us accountable to our job performance more intentionally than most situations. And by intentional, that means we have to allow that to happen, because if we don't allow that and we're not intentional, what tends to happen, we make up our own job. We kind of go as we, and we don't, we say we're accountable, but we're not functionally accountable. So that's why I'm starting with the first one is, like, guys, if you say, okay, the board's the boss, the elder team, but how functional is that? How specific is that? Or do you just kind of like make it up as the Spirit leads you as you go and there's not real? So that's something I'd like you to think through, okay? In fact, just to encourage you, Jimmy Dodd, this I think will encourage all of us. He writes this actually in the book. And by the way, you got to keep in mind, he serves a huge swath of evangelicalism. Like, he's ministering to people from all sorts of tribes. And here's what he says. If you're serving in a staff-led independent church without oversight of a supervising board, be careful. That's the nicest way I can say it. If you don't have a boss, you're tiptoeing through a minefield. If you've placed yourself in a Lone Ranger position that has contributed to leading many pastors down the road of ministry demise. If you're leading a church from a position of being the primary leader as the head of staff with no board to whom you're accountable, you're operating outside of the bounds of Scripture. There is no church in the New Testament functioning with only one elder. Each church is to have a plurality. Throughout the New Testament, church leadership continually points to one central theme, plurality. The church is to be led by a plurality of godly leaders. So I just want you to understand where he's coming from. He's really kind of adopted, and we've adopted this tribal feel that we really resonate with. So that's another reason I highly recommend the book. Secondly, you need a trainer. Okay, can anybody just give me a brief description of what you think a trainer would do? What would a trainer do for you if you were being trained in something?
Someone to improve you and make you better than what you are.
Okay, improve. And what would they be improving?
Depends on what they're training.
Skills.
A skill, usually. Who's got an example of something they've been trained in recently? A very specific skill. Anybody. It can be in the church, outside the church.
The process of going through the Art of Teaching Masterclass.
The Art of Teaching Masterclass. Who's the trainer?
It's John Mark Comer. It's something they put out, but I'm doing it with Chris Comer.
Okay, very cool. So it's very specific skill set. Great. Anybody else? Jim, did you go through kids ministry, like leadership training ever? No. You kind of...
I was a teacher.
You were a teacher. Okay, so you got training in teaching. Yeah. Okay. I think as pastors, it's easy to gravitate towards generalized training. Like, okay, I'm at a conference, I'm at a regional, I'm around, and there's a brotherhood. That's beautiful, by the way. I celebrate that tremendously. But I think it's very different when you get isolated, specialized training, because that keeps you sharpened in a different way, and it forces you to stretch yourself. So let me tell you a couple of things that happened to me. First of all, about 15 years ago, I realized I'm the only staff guy. I don't get the same kind of training I used to have to get when I was in the corporate world. And I can't get it. I love the region and I love our movement and all that, but I'm going to do something out of my comfort zone. And I wanted to learn how to run better. So I joined a running team with a trainer that would train the runners how to run. And I thought, okay, what's there to running? You just kind of get out there, you put shoes on, and you do it. And you either do it or you don't do it. But as I got into this and the coach was training us, I would go to group sessions and then, you know, do some other things and online stuff. There was this whole, like, depth of understanding about how to run distance running. Mark, you ran a lot. That was incredibly profound to me and very different. And by the way, what's the best ratio for a runner to run? A 90-degree angle or something different? Does anybody know? 87%. Did you know that? So if you're a straight up and down, that's not optimal. But a lot of runners, if you see a runner, just watch sometime. If they're really struggling, they swivel at their hips. They lean forward, especially if they're going into a hill. And they're going way past the 87%. And it's a very ineffective way to run. Now, if that's your big takeaway from the Pastor Summit, you're in trouble. Bad reflection on my seminar. I'm just saying there are things that we need to... We're competent at some things really well as pastors, but we're not as competent as we think we are. And so when you invite somebody and you put yourself in a situation where you can get trained, now let's translate it to the church. Here's a couple of things. Obviously, you can do things like the training the brother mentioned. What's your first name?
Craig.
You can do those things. I highly recommend it. But those things are harder to do, and it takes time and energy. But there are some simple things you can do. For instance, I'll recommend this. How about, like, just diving into a really good book that's very specific to a skill set of leadership or pastoring? Like, push yourself to do that. So I'm going to just give you my three favorite over the last couple of years, obviously. Survivor, Thrive, Jimmy Dodd, it's on there. I also want to recommend two other books. And by the way, I kind of had to force myself to do this. It wasn't like I woke up and said, oh, I'm just excited to do this. I like to read, but, you know, I knew it would press me. So the other one is called From Strength to Strength by Arthur Brooks, who's actually a Harvard fellow and professor. And he wrote a lot. This doesn't apply to you, Brian, because you're too young. But anyway, if you're hitting the second season of your life, if you're hitting the 50s or older, this is a tremendous book about how to move from your first season of life strength into a second season of life strength. And if you hold on to your first season of life strength, you're in trouble. For instance, when do Nobel Prize winning physicists and mathematicians, what's the average age? 35 to 38. By the time they hit 40, they don't win prize, they don't do this on that level anymore. And one of the saddest things is studying the story of these highly competent people that in their 40s and 50s keep thinking they can do what they did in their 30s in their profession. And they often get depressed and discouraged. Gal, what else? What's the peak for a sprinter? I think it's the 20s. What is it for a distance runner? It's older. Yeah, it's older because of what you need. So as a pastor, you might develop certain competencies early on in your ministry and profession, ministry. But if you don't make a switch as you get older, I think you're going to be in trouble. Anyways, this book was recommended to me on my sabbatical, made a huge difference in my life. The other one is Lead by Paul David Tripp. This one was recommended by Brent Knox. And I just really, really have... And one of his main takeaways is the whole idea of authentic community. And the fact that as elders and leaders, if the only time you are interacting is based on the church ministry schedule, he says it's too shallow. It's just too shallow. If really 98% of what you're doing is we got to plan this meeting, we got to have this discussion about ministry teams, we got to organize this service, this outreach, whatever, that's fine and healthy and necessary and important. But where is the on guard for one another and the flock? Are you actually sitting down and having a meal and you're not talking ministry, you're talking what's going on in your life? What's the thing that gut punched you this week? What's the thing in the backstage of your life that you haven't shared with anybody? And your wife knows it, but you're not telling anybody else. She figured it out and she told you and you're in denial. I don't know, maybe your wife's different than mine. I can't hide stuff from her. You know, they see things, they understand things, but then she doesn't want to coach me the way a man can coach me. She can't coach me the way a man can coach me. She tries to coach me the way a man coaches me, it blows up, it doesn't work. Now she can speak into my life in a certain way and then, but I need other men to kind of sharpen me. And so anyways, this book is fascinating. It's got a great thing. But what I'm saying is develop it, intentionalize it. If you're going to a general conference or something and you can build in some extra time, just hang out at another church and experience what they do and ask some questions. Two of the last 4 years, we've had conferences in our region near Jacksonville, Florida. It's been a pastor wives retreat in St. Simon Island off of the coast of Georgia. But it's only an hour drive from Jacksonville. So what I did is two of the last 4 or 5 years, I took an extra day off. Didn't show up at Evergreen that day, but I let people know. And we got a replacement. And Vanessa and I stayed overnight and hung out with the Jacksonville Church Awaken. And then one of those days they had a leadership meeting after church on Sunday. And I just was like a sponge soaking up how Frank Liu runs a leadership meeting, which is different than the way I do it. For one, he's a lot more analytical. Secondly, he's Chinese and I'm not, if you haven't figured that out. And it's just a beautiful, now, is it right or is it wrong? No. But I gleaned a couple of things because I was, in a sense, putting myself in a training position to be sharpened. Does that make sense? So find creative ways to do that. Those are just some. And there's others. So you don't have to go to some big, like, week-long, year-long seminar. You can find these little snippets. When I was on the sabbatical that I took a year and a half ago, Vanessa and I intentionally visited 10 different local churches during the sabbatical just to be exposed to them, just to see what they do and how they do it, and just like soak it up and then follow up with questions as we could. So get some training. Third, oh my gosh, we're going, well, I got to speed it up. All right, coach. You need a coach. Somebody who's going to observe your performance, be a sounding board for what you're going to do next, be a tremendous cheerleader, but also be honest with you about where they think you might need to change something. What I found very interesting, Jimmy Dodd said in their ministry, Pastor Serve, they prefer the coaches in their ministry to be pastors from smaller churches. And I thought, why is that? Because a lot of the churches are bigger probably. And he said, because the small church pastor will tell the large church pastor what they really need to hear. And they're not afraid to say it. because they're not some big mega church guy, and they'll just shoot straight with him. He said mega church guys who go into coaching will just kind of elevate the giftedness, and they won't shoot straight with them. And he said, anyways, here's a list of what he says makes a great coach. I'll just read it to you. Six qualities to look for, or five qualities to look for in a coach. So I want you to ask yourself, do I have someone who has these qualities that's coaching me and potentially our church, but at least me? Clarification of performance expectations. Do you have something they can review? Here's an expectation of what I should be doing, and you're reviewing it. Identifying the shortfalls in reaching those expectations. Can they identify the weak core competencies of your life? Rob, I think you referred to that, like doing the thing that you're weak at. Do you have a coach that can identify that and help you get some improvement in it? Are there any mutually agreed upon strategies to improve your ministry or your church that the coach can work on with you? And lastly, is there a commitment to continuous improvement that coach can observe and keep you accountable to? By the way, the best coach that I had, I think, in my entire ministry was Tim Herring from West Virginia for about 12 to 15 years. He would coach me, and we would have regular conversations, and we would hit these five things. I'll tell you what, it was very hard for me because his church went from an I-85 church plant to the largest evangelical church in West Virginia, maybe the biggest one in our movement. And if you know anything about it, they've built a building, then they built another building, and they've planted two other, like, highly successful, in a sense, disciple-making churches that are very evangelistic in their communities. And I would get moments where I don't want him to coach me anymore because he's, like, way better than my church, you know, and me. And then God had to break me down and just keep me humble. And, boy, he loved coaching me. And we reconnected a little while ago. I think he did. Maybe he has a different viewpoint, but we just had a really beautiful reconnection about 2 years ago, because he's gone through retirement about a year or two before I will. And so he was able to really help me through that and give me some ideas. So anyways, that's it. Boss, trainer, coach. Any questions, comments right now? Okay. Last three. Counselor, mentor, and friend. Here's we go. I think this is the hardest thing, these last three, but they all interrelate. I think that as pastors, where's my phone? Wait, no. I got it.
I said Rob's got it.
He doesn't have it. He doesn't have it. Here we go. Let's see if I can find this. While I'm looking for this, would somebody please read Psalm 42 out loud? Go ahead. Psalm 42.
As a deer pants for flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? My tears have been my food day and night, while they say to me all the day long, where is your God? These things I remember as I pour out my soul, how I would go with the throng and lead them in the procession to the house of God, with glad shouts and songs of praise, a multitude keeping festival. Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God. My soul is cast down within me, therefore I remember you, from the land of Jordan and of Hermon, and from the Mount Mizar. deep calls to deep. At the roar of your waterfalls, all your breakers and your waves have gone over me. By day, the Lord commands his steadfast love, and at night, his song is with me, a prayer to the God of my life. I say to God, my rock, why have you forgotten me? Why do I go mourning because of the oppression of the enemy? As with a deadly wound in my bones, my adversaries taunt me, while they say to me all the day long, where is your God?
That's good. What is he telling us about the backstage of his life in this psalm? Help me. Is he happy?
No.
Oh, okay. Not doing well. His enemies are taunting him. His friends are saying, where is your God? He says at the end of it, you have abandoned me. Now, is it theologically true? It's how he felt, so he expressed it. And then the last verses, he says, I have a mortal wound, a deadly wound. By the way, what does a mortal wound do? It kills the person. He said, I am wounded so badly, I'm going to die unless God comes in and intervenes. So what I want to ask you this. Who in your world right now knows what's crushing you and what's causing you a deadly mortal wound? And if you don't have anything, I'll celebrate that, but I suspect that most of us do. In fact, most of us live like the beginning of the book, A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, and it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom, and it was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief, and it was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of life. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, and it was the winter of despair. And so you and I need to invite the right people at the right time, in the right way, into our despair. And if we don't do this, we're going to miss out. And we're going to start pretending, and we're going to put all of our focus on the front stage, our gifting and our skill, and something down the road's going to fall apart. And a counselor will help you do that. Now, it can be a professional counselor, it can be a non-professional counselor, but it should be a safe place outside of your church, and this is what I'm going to recommend. Because what's some of the biggest tension that you have right now is probably with somebody in leadership in your church, because you rub shoulders. I'm not saying, by the way, that you have major tension. Don't, please don't get that. And some of you are in beautiful settings. But we have, at least can we agree that we have friction? And sometimes the friction leads to tension, and sometimes the tension leads to hurt and woundedness, and sometimes it leads to stuffing things, and sometimes it leads to all sorts of things. Not just leadership, people in the church often too. And what I'm saying is this, is the beautiful thing about the right counselor is they're a safe place to talk about that. Because I suspect in a local church, the worst thing to do is take attention with another leader and talk to another leader about it. Okay? And so that's why, by the way, a coach might be a great one for that as well. But I'm just saying a counselor who has no skin in the game, who's a safe place and not going to share that with anybody else in the universe, can be a hugely healthy thing. And here's the thing. I think a lot of times elders, pastors, core leaders think, I shouldn't have to do this. We should be able to kind of like be so much in unity and harmony that this is not necessary. I don't think so. And if you are at that place and you don't need one, fine. But that has been really, really helpful to me, both professional and non-professional counselors who are safe and appropriate people for me to just pour out my stuff and get my wound opened and then get it scrubbed. Two other sources that help me on the backside is a mentor, which is somebody who can see things you can't see from a different perspective than you can see. Kind of like this. When D-Day happened, after the first 2 to 3 days, and they got a beachhead, the Air Force believed one thing about the war, and the Army believed another thing, troops on the ground. Which one thought they were going to win, and which one thought they were going to lose? Just take a guess. The guys on the ground thought they were going to lose. Why?
They could only see
death. They could only see, yeah, and what percent of their guys got annihilated, even though they got the beachhead, and they knew how much more they had to go. Why did the Air Force think they were going to win?
They could see retreat.
They could see the retreat. They could see what else was going on or not going on behind the front lines. And oftentimes a mentor will see things we can't see, and they can share some things into our situation that we need to hear. And these mentors, by the way, can occur during... A mentor is not necessarily a lifelong mentor. There might be seasons of mentorship. I think when you have seasons of mentorship, you celebrate them, but understand they might not have longevity. But when you get them and you seek them out, let me tell you one thing that I did to seek out mentorship and how it really helped me. We had a Zoom call a few years ago, sponsored by C1 Network, about pastoral retirement. I don't know if anybody here was on it, but Rick Beamer was on it and a few other guys. And one of the guys that spoke was from outside of our network. His name was Doug Schmidt, and he pastors a small church in the Detroit area called Woodline Bible Church that only has 16 campuses. So it's a 16 campus church in the Detroit area. And what really encouraged me was he came on and he said, look, I want to tell you, first of all, if you retire, you got to realize you're going to become nobody really fast. So just deal with it and understand that. And then secondly, he said, I want to tell you, in our situation, I was about 3 years before retirement, and I realized, and I had a talk with our board, I did not have hardly any retirement taken out or sufficient retirement for many, many, many years, and I'm not in a place to be able to retire well. Now, this is a guy with a 16-campus church. I'm thinking, okay, but it encouraged me so much because I was in the same place, but not 16 campuses. I only have 13, 14, you know. So anyways, don't worry. And he said he came up with this thing called a rabbi trust fund. It really exists where you can set up a trust fund for retirement for the pastor, and the church can put as much into it as they want, and you defer the payment till later, and, you know, and you can make yourself, the church can make the pastor the sole trustee, and they can put all sorts of things. He said they set that up for him. And then he shared how they were going to do it and how they did it and how it really helped them. And so I just called him up. The next day he told me we could contact him, and we talked a little bit. It led to our church setting up the same thing on a smaller scale, but for me. And it's beautiful. It's helped really put me in a place where I can retire in the next 2 years. And it was because I invited a mentoring opportunity that was out there that I had to go grab. Does that make sense? The mentoring opportunity was there, but I had to grab it. Now, that's not the end of the story. On my sabbatical a few months later, I told Vanessa, I said, on the way back from Wisconsin, let's see if I can grab breakfast with Doug Schmidt. And I thought there was something inside of me that thought, the dude doesn't want anything to do with you. You're not on his scale. You know, whatever. So I call him up. He says, hey, I'd love breakfast. Let's do it. So we do it outside of Detroit, Michigan on the way back. We had to convert things. He introduced me to three of his best friends in ministry. And we're sitting down, you know, having breakfast. And he says, hey, I want you and Vanessa to come to a retreat in Michigan in September. And I'm going to pay for it. You just have to fly there. I said, great, what's it on? He said, pastoral succession. So for three days on the shores of Lake, Huron? Okay, I've never been to Lake Huron. I've been to the other lakes. I got together with 12 couples, and we all talked pastoral succession. And there was a guy from Indiana that came in and spoke. Do you see where I'm going with it? It was a gold mine, but it took me mining for it. Does that make sense? You've got to mine for mentorship. And then when you get it, you celebrate it. But also understand it's not necessarily, mentorship is not this long-standing necessarily. I know him the rest, because I have had very little contact with Doug since. I've poked him a couple times, but he's running in a different circle. Last thing is you need a friend. Okay? You really, really need a friend. Somebody who's going to demonstrate steadfast love. Somebody who's going to perhaps reveal some blind spots to you. Somebody who's going to walk through stuff with you. Even when you're kind of like feeling I'm confused and I don't know what to do. Let me read Proverbs 27. Proverbs 27 is one of my favorite Proverbs. And I think it's a fascinating book. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Verse 5. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, or the wounds of a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of a friend springs from their heartfelt counsel. Why is the wound from a friend a blessing? Doesn't feel like it sometimes, but why? They do it in love.
They can be trusted.
They can be trusted. And what kind of a friend is it who wounds you and then runs? It's not a friend. Have you ever had somebody do that? Wound you and then run? I have. Why do you think I hate ministry sometimes? Because I got people who I think are friends. They wound me and then they run. I don't do well with that. Now, they might be saying something I need to hear, but I got to filter it really hard and ask God. But I tell you what, the ones that have wounded me and stayed with me and loved me, whether I got it or not, those are the ones that have ministered to me. And that's the kind of person I want to be if God's calling me. Now, that's not all friendship does. I totally get that. But I'm just saying, sometimes you need friends you can pour out your heart to, a safe place, but also know that if you're really going down a wrong path, they love you too much to just let you go off the cliff. So, if I can, it's a pastor's conference. I'm just going to try this in 2 minutes. I've had a couple of friends I've had to lean on. I have one friend who knows about this, who's really walked through this with me really well. I have another friend who's offered to walk through me with it, and I'll be following up with him. You need friendship. Now, I hope none of you have anything like I just described, but I bet you all of you have something that's potentially crushing you. Make sure you have a friend that's walking through it with you. Make sure you get past your tendency to think, I can handle this on my own. Because I doubt that you can. David couldn't do it on his own. Paul couldn't do it on his own. And make sure you put all six of those in play. Does that make sense? Be intentional about it. And here's my exercise for you. I gave you some questions that I'd like you to follow up on. And I've got, oh my gosh, I've got 340. Okay. So here's what I think I'd like you to do. And you can take it anywhere you want to. Take some time. If you got to go, go. Take some time and rate yourself on those six relational people, like coaches, bosses, trainer. What's your best at? What's your worst at? And be honest with yourself. And here's my takeaway for you. Take the one that you think you need to sharpen the most. Be intentional about it. And invite somebody to help keep you accountable to do it. So I'm going to share mine. You already heard some of them. But I'm going to share with you the one that I need to work on. And I'm giving you permission to follow up with me if you want to. dblum@evergreen.org is this. I have five other elders. So we have six. All five of them are intensely committed time-wise to their vocation. They own businesses, three of them, their own businesses. One of them is high up in the Missile Defense Agency, so guess what he's doing now? He's trying to keep Iran and Israel for, in whatever way from whatever. You got it figured out. The fifth one is got a high-powered job, and he's the sole caretaker for his mom and his dad, who are separated and live an hour and a half away, and he takes them to medical appointments. How much time quality time do you think I get with those guys? Very little. So in my mind, I've got to make a big shift, and I don't know how to do it. So what I'm in the process of doing is contacting a couple of ministry that have expertise in helping ministry teams, leadership teams, elder teams organize and empower and delegate. I could unpack that a lot, but what I'm doing is I'm not being passive about it. I'm saying, look, this is not working well. It's not, by the way, we're not disunited. Please don't read that into it. And we've made some really, really good decisions, but it's got so intense that we actually decided to take 6 weeks of the summer totally off, no elder meetings. I'm going to meet with them one-on-one because I've got the time and bandwidth. Other than that, and the guy said, thank you, we're just dying here and we need some space. But I don't want that to continue. So I'm inviting in somebody with expertise, a couple of different ones I'm vetting, that can sit down with all of us and provide some guidance that we can incorporate and agree on together. Does that make sense? But that's not my natural inclination. My natural inclination is just to keep going, keep casting vision, keep storming the gates, like we're gonna build the wall, just suck it up, deal with it, and we're gonna make it happen. And that's counterintuitive to where I'm at. All of us need to press against our intuitive nature sometimes to do it a certain way, invite somebody in that can speak into it that might not think the same way that we do. That's my takeaway. Yours could be something different. You might need a friend, you might need a boss, you might need a coach, you might need a counselor. In my case, I need somebody to give us training. So here's what I'd like you to do is in a moment when you're really serious about it, rate yourself on the six, and then take some steps and invite somebody to keep you accountable to follow through on it. Okay? Does that make sense? That's all I can give you today. Thank you. Go for it. Love you guys. Appreciate you.